Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, how are you? My name is Andrew WK. They say when things are very delicious, it must be Heritage Radio.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's March 1st, 2016. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. Thanks to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. And what a show we have. We've got Thorst, Luxus, and Jopin. It's like, are we in Denmark? Or are we in Holland? This is going to be an awesome show. Anna, I bet you're confused already.
Yeah, well, we all survived Beer Week, so I'm still kind of in a spin. I don't even know what you're talking about.
This is like the perfect way to end off Beer Week. And one of our favorite guests, BR Royal, is in the house. And, of course, you brought us an international brewer. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yes, we have the Jopin Brewery from Netherlands, from Haarlem, sort of our sister city, I suppose, in Netherlands. We used to import them several years ago, well, more than several years ago, and now have them back again in the Shelton Brothers fold. We're happy
That's
to do
great.
That.
And you guys have been doing a lot of things in the city.
We have. We've been going around to accounts. We've also got a launch tonight at Spuiten Duyvel. With the Dutch connection right there.
All right, let's say hello to Mr. Jopin.
Hi, how are you doing?
What's your name, man?
My name's Erwin.
Erwin Jopin.
Yeah, Erwin Klein from Jopin.
I had a lot of fun because I know this is going to be a tongue twister. I was like...
Yeah, definitely.
Thorst and Jopin. And Mike Amity from Thorst, tell us who you brought in. Everybody can introduce themselves. We invited you on the show and you really brought all your guys out. Thank you.
Yeah, we got the whole crew here pretty much, yeah.
Let's go around. Everybody say their name.
I'm Graham. I bartend at Thorst.
I thought you were the beer boy.
Head beer boy.
Head beer boy, exactly.
Thank you. Everybody say your real jobs because you're pretty fun.
Fernando Soria, I'm the bartender and morale manager at Thorst.
Morale manager, that's a good one.
Anthony Cerise, bartender at Thorst and assistant brewer at Long Island City Beer Project.
Yeah, my name's Ryan Malbin. I am also a bartender at Thorst, and I'm also the beer director at Lupolo in Manhattan.
And let's have Erwin. Let's say your name one more time.
Erwin Klein.
All right. So, and do you feel like you know everybody now?
Yeah, we all go way back.
This is fun. So we got Thorsten. So, you know, it's such a cool beer town, and I'm going to give big props to BR Roya because you always do bring some great people in from your portfolio. And it's funny, I was in Holland in 2009, so I knew of Jopin, and I've never had it before. So we're looking forward to tasting through your beers, and I know that Mike from Taurus, you guys brought a lot of beers too. I'm going to jump to you guys. Tell us about your beer program, because honestly, I've been there a few times, and I know you have the Michelin star winning restaurant.
Yep.
But what is your beer program in the front?
So we have 21 draft lines, and we're basically all about just bringing in the best beers we can. It's basically the stuff that we like to drink. It's organized from light to dark, roughly, across the 21 lines. So we've always got something on light, lower in alcohol. So we've always got some big, heavy Imperial Stouts on as well. Two different keg rooms as well. So, you know, all year round, we've got big beers up. And, sours, IPAs, we try to cover the spectrum, and about 150 or 200 bottles as well.
That's great. And I know you had a lead-off question.
Oh, I was just curious, who's in charge of the beer program? Is it collaborative? Does someone spearhead it?
Yeah, I'm the beverage director, so I do all the buying, and it's not a bad job to have.
Cool. How long have you been there?
Since we started. So it's been 3 years, actually, this month now. Yeah.
All right.
Happy anniversary, you guys.
And what's your job as beer boy? What does that mean?
I drink a lot of beer, and I pour the beers, and I make sure that if people don't have a beer, I get uncomfortable, and I just start to break out in hives. So that's pretty much the gist of it. I'm the weekend warrior there for the most part. Get everybody through the weekend.
All right, Beer. What did you do? You were at Taurus yesterday with Erwin from Jopin.
We were meeting with John Hall. Having a nice little chat with John and
from
trying some beers.
Beer, right?
Exactly.
All About Beer magazine.
And also figured that would be a good introduction to the New York beer scene. You know, that's a nice range of beers. And we had a little sneak peek with the Doubting Thomas, which is the Jopin Quadruple, brewed with American hops. So we have a head on draft there at Thorst. It's probably still up.
It is, yeah.
Cool. What are the hops, the American hops?
We got Simcoe and Cascade and then Citra in the dry hop.
And a quad. That's cool.
All right. Let's taste the first beer. So what's the first beer that you poured for us? Is this a Jopen beer?
That's a Jopen beer, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a Jopen Hoppen beer. Tell something about it. It's actually the first beer we ever brewed in for Jopen. It's a 1501 original recipe. Harlem is a very old, has a very old brewing culture as a city, and they registered and documented their recipes. One of them is the 1501 Hoppen beer. Hoppen beer is Hoppen beer because the first time registered that hops is used in beer. Before that, it's all Groot, Koit. That's our other beer. We will call this beer for the United States Harlem 1501, though, because Hoppen beer is confusing. People think they get a hoppy beer like an IPA. They don't. They get an old, traditional style heavy blonde, but then with a very, very nice hop touch to it, with what I think is great European hops. Hallertau Mittelfuhr and East Kent Golding, they are really still very nice hops, although I love a good IPA.
Erwin, keep pouring beers. We got almost 10 guests. We're going to drink 10 beers here tonight.
Cool.
Let's ask the tourist guys ask some questions. So Erwin came from Mulholland. I want you guys to each ask him a question, something that you would ask him if perhaps you wanted to carry the beer at Torst, or if you had questions that you think a customer might want to know. So why don't you start us off for now?
How did you start brewing?
Well, we started brewing really to celebrate the 750th anniversary of the city of Haarlem. Looking into the old brewing history, there was like a trust, like a group of friends coming together to do something with the lost beer culture, because there was no more brewing in Haarlem going on then. This is in 1994, and we find these two old brewing recipes in the city archives. Hoppenbeer, the one you're tasting now, was one of them, and that's how it started.
Great. Next question.
We just tried the quad before coming here, so we had something to taste.
Cool.
We all agree that it had like a very like chocolatey characteristic to it. And I'm usually very accustomed to quads being really sweet. Was that just a recipe you found in the archives, or did you change some things up in it to sort of give it the sort of balanced flavor it has?
No, we wanted to make a quad 10%. But this is nice because we brew in a church. The Holy Trinity for Haarlem was the brewing grains, barley, wheat, and oats. And this quad also holds barley, wheat, and oats, so it changes the mouthfeel to the beer, dramatically, but quite a lot. You get probably some of the chocolate from the roasted wheat malt, and the Cascade Simcoe Citra give a very nice touch to the finish.
Mr. Graham Beer Boy,
hey there. Are you generally sorry? Your brewery is new to me. I haven't really yesterday actually. The first time I had on a draft was first time I actually tasted any of your beer. Are you just sticking primarily to Belgian styles, or are you branching out, maybe do like more of an American IPA, or I don't know, a Berliner Weiss?
No, definitely. We brew about 30 beers per year. There's only 30 beer styles. There's only four that we're bringing out to the United States. But we go from historic styles, 1407 recipe Groot, to modern style IPAs, rye pale ale. We've got a rye pale ale here with 25% rye. And we do collabs and different stuff. We did a 70% rye wine with Lervig, 12% ABV. That's crazy beer.
Yeah.
So we do that stuff too.
Is that where the 1501 comes from on this beer we just tried?
1501 is the year of the official city recipe, yes.
How big is your brewing system, if you don't mind me asking?
There's 20 hecks in the church and 40 hecks out in the second brew house that we built.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. And then the other gentleman can ask a question, too.
Sure. No, I was just wondering what you've got coming out soon that you're really excited about, or what have you brewed recently that you're really anxious for people to taste?
Thank you. I like that question. We are not only focusing on our standard portfolio, but we're very happy that we were able to do limited editions and collaborations. And very exciting collaboration that we got coming up this year is with De Molen from Holland.
Yeah.
But there's also something we'll be doing with Odell and with Cigar City. So those will be great projects.
How did that come about?
You know, I think Bob said it today from Shelton. This is such a friendly business. Everybody talks together. It's such great fun. So if you know somebody and you say, hey, let's do a collab, he'll say, yeah, let's do it.
Irwin,
that's fun.
One more beer, please.
Yes, keep sir. Going.
And now, Mike, so this is kind of like introducing your guys. It's quite a bunch of boys you have here, the beer boys from Torst. You know, how did you put together your team? You know, when you started, were any of these guys on the opening team?
Actually, it's amazing.
Everybody besides me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Except for Graham, yeah. He's
except
a giant
boy, yeah.
But how did you put them together?
No, I actually didn't put them together, actually.
I would, call out to John Langley.
Absolutely. That's all John Langley. Thanks, for John. Sure. a lot of the people that have been at Torst have been there from,
so we know John.
From,
so John,
day one. Yeah.
John was the first.
Yeah, he was the GM when Torst opened. Yeah, so he was responsible for bringing together this amazing talent that you see in this room. Yeah, that's right.
That's right. We're good looking too.
BR, what's it like for you? You know, as a sales rep, when you go over to Torst, I mean, does it have a certain reputation above other beer bars in the city, or? Are your brewers, they want to go there just because it's
well, a lot reputation. Of people, I mean, it has a reputation, you know, both internationally because of Yeppe's connection with the brewing world. And also, I mean, what's interesting for me is the fact, as Mike was explaining, you know, it goes from lighter, more sessionable beers, you get these really, really big, full-bodied, higher alcohol beers, and the beers are treated well. It's a nice atmosphere to have a beer. You know, there's no TVs. It's not like it's not to say there's anything wrong with bars with TVs or sports going on, but it's you're there to talk to people and enjoy the beer while you're there.
That's actually one of the things that I think is really cool about Torst is like when you walk in, it looks pretty fancy. Everybody's there drinking beer from wine glasses and stuff. So it's kind of our job to make sure that it doesn't feel fancy.
We never want anybody to there's something for everybody, you know. Like even if somebody comes in and like on the weekends and wants like a tequila shot, like I'll just playfully like redirect them.
You run across the street and get some tequila.
Yeah, yeah,
you're so hospitable, man.
No.
Well, I love that kind of place. It's like we get cigarettes, right? Oh, you want cigarettes? I'll call the deli. You need some tequila?
They delivered too. And shout out to Green Garden Deli.
Where would you put that, like a Belgian triple on that spectrum? Would it go towards the light? I mean,
Belgian triple, yeah.
Good question.
Right before the warm room, because the kind of light to dark spectrum is more than just color or alcohol. It's like overall sort of impression of the beer. You know, is it heavy overall? Irregardless of alcohol, it could be a very sour beer or whatever. But yeah, a triple is a perfect example of one that fits really well at the tail end of the cold room beers, right before you get to the warm room. Unless it's a triple that's really high in alcohol that could stand up to being served a little bit warmer, in which case we'd move it over to the warm room and put it at the first line. Triples fit in really well in between those two rooms.
And Irwin, so what was your impression of Torst?
I loved it, and you know and that's no sucking up, Mike. It's just that it underlines what I love about the United States when it comes to beer. And that was a question that I had to you guys. I mean, how do you come to do this thing? Do you have a common denominator that you all love beer, or you love a place like Torst? How does that work?
So I think it is because we all love beer. It's actually really, really great to work there and see how many people that come in that are just excited to be in the space. They're just excited to be at the bar. They're excited about what we have to say. And as bartenders, we're really, really happy to showcase what we're pouring. And I think that shows with our enthusiasm for the product. It shows in the way that our the kind of family atmosphere that we have at the bar. There's not a lot of turnover. You know, we've been open for 3 years. And, of course, we've had some staff that have left. But for the most part, a good chunk of the original staff has stuck around for 3 years. And, it just all of that kind of speaks to the kind of place that Torst is. And it's just, you know, one of the few places that really, really celebrates beer.
So who's Joey Pepper? You know, I've never met Joey Pepper.
The Joey Pepper.
Irrelevant.
Yeah.
Oh, that scrawny little kid? He's our kind of... enthusiastic. I mean, given I have another brewer in house, which is Anthony Cerise, maybe he should explain Drain Pepper since he's the other guy that's brewing.
Yeah, Joey's super, super into craft beer, always very enthusiastic when new brewers are coming by the bar. And he also brews himself and does some great work.
Yeah,
for sure.
He also actually does the pairings for Luxus. Yeah. So if you if you head to the back of Taurus, we have a Michelin star restaurant, 16 seats, tasting menu, and it's the only Michelin star restaurant that where you can only get beer. And instead of wine pairings, they do beer pairings. And Joey is responsible for figuring those pairings out. So
that's exciting. I know the cookbook's coming out too.
Yeah, that's right.
And we're gonna have Yuppie on in May.
Oh, cool.
The cookbook.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that.
Perfect.
I like what we're drinking. What is this?
Yeah.
Thanks. I just wanted to say this is our Jacobus Rye Pale Ale. It's brewed with 25% rye and Cascade and Simcoe hops. So American style and new style craft beer. But, you know, we love to work with rye, although difficult to brew with. We now have a wort press, so it's easier. A nice story behind it. Like, everything we do has a nice story behind it, to be honest. Jacobus is called Jacobus because in the old days, pilgrims would stay in hostels, and hostels were allowed to brew beer without paying taxes if they brewed with rye. Hence, we brewed a rye wine, in this case, a rye pale ale, that's called Jacobus because our church, where we brew in an old church, was called the Jacob's Church, hence Jacobus Rye Pale Ale.
I like that. It was a church, now it's a brewery. Isn't that cool?
That's awesome, yeah.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Don't worry, Anna, I'll be back in a hurry. I gotta go to 15th Street and cop another 40. It doesn't matter because we're drunk and we're young. Couple kids trying to have some fun, and we know these are the days we'll look back upon.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, welcome, David, our new engineer. Good to have you on the show, man. Thanks so much. We've got this crazy crew.
It's pretty great. You know, I have to ask you, like, everybody that I'm friends with that works in the beer industry is so jealous of your draft system. And, you know, especially in the middle of happy hour and a keg is foaming up, it's like, oh, the most frustrating. How did that come about? Whose idea was that? Who installed it? Who developed it?
Yeah, so that that unit is called the flux capacitor, of course.
Trademark.
Trademark, yeah.
TM.
Gabe Gordon. It was actually engineered by a guy named Gabe Gordon at Beechwood Barbecue out California. In California.
California, yeah.
Yeah. And he's real good friends with Yuppa. And when they started up the bar, he's like, you know, we'd love to have one of those things in our bar. So he engineered it for the space. He showed up in this huge crate. He actually flew out, engineered it for the space, got it installed, left us with a bag of parts, and flew home. It's amazing. We have control for pressure on each individual line at the panel behind the bar. The ability to pour five different gas blends that you can plug out of and into on the fly. So it works really well largely for when beers are either over or undercarbonated. You know, if there's a problem pouring a beer, you can kind of fine tune it to maybe pour beers where other people would have to call the distributor.
That's great. And did you guys need training on it when they started?
Yeah, everybody largely works it out over the course of working with it. Yeah, because honestly, for the most part, you don't really need to mess with it too much. You do change the gas blends if you move to a key keg, unless there's a problem, you really don't need to worry about it.
Graham, you had a question off air, but please ask it again.
Oh, sure. You were speaking about how they were brewing in hostels and how it could be tax-free if it was brewed with primarily rye. Is that because was there maybe a surplus of rye, or what exactly was the reason for that?
Honestly, I'm not sure. It's pilgrims who travel without money, basically, asking refuge. So offering them beer without being taxed sounds logical. And rye, I think you're right, rye was not a grain at that time that was being short in supply. Mm-hmm. So they would be able to use rye without paying the taxes, and then that's how the beer became affordable, I suppose. So, it must be somewhere in that realm of explanation.
Sure.
But I'm not 100% sure.
That sounds pretty good. Anthony, so one of the tourist guys, but you're also a brewer. Tell us where you're working and the... What, you know, that's your passion, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I bartend 2 days a week at Terst, and I'm at Long Island City Beer Project full-time working as an assistant brewer alongside Dan Acosta.
I was here 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Friend of the show.
Dan and Damon came by to give a little chat about the beers.
Yeah, that was a good show, yeah. And how'd you start working with them?
I saw on Instagram that they were looking for a cellarman/assistant brewer, and I applied for the job. I went by with a beer that I had brewed at home. Tasted Dan on it. He asked me some questions, and he hired me on the spot.
That's great.
Yeah. Yep.
Can I ask you, back to these historical beers, just really quickly, where did the recipes for that come from? I mean, are you guys doing research? Do you have an historian on your team? And have you tried any of the American, you know, Dogfish Head? There's a lot of people kind of getting into this. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I love old recipes and forgotten knowledge, you know, these forgotten gems, also old brewing grains that are out there that you can really do fun stuff with. We work with historians. We have access to ship logs, for example. What we're drinking now actually is it's a Luik beer. It's a 17th century beer. It comes from the city of Luik, which at those time was part of the Netherlands. It's now Belgium. And this was a beer that was most likely to be transported on ships for the shipmates, because this is a spelt beer, and it had fairly a large amount of hop compared to the other beers in those days. So it kept well. So they used it on ships, and this beer we made especially for the Dirk Hartog year, which is the celebration of 400 years of Australia being discovered in 1616 by a Dutch guy, Dirk Hartog. Hence, Dirk Hartog beer that we brewed just for Australia to celebrate. But it's we have access to these records, and it can be ship records or
those public records, or is that something that's you guys have?
No, it's public. It's public. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, it seems like you're seeing the world through the eyes of Dutchmen. Because for the rest of us, remember in 2009, you guys celebrated Henry Hudson's discovery of the Hudson. And like the entire, like the prince and princess from Netherlands came to New York, and I went to some parties and things, and they took me to Amsterdam. And now you guys are going to Australia. So I don't know. But talking about Dutch centric view, a few years ago, BR, we did some Dutch beer weeks, and we had some fun with Dutch beer.
That's right.
In
they
New
had
York.
The five Dutch days.
And we haven't really done anything with Dutch beers for a while. So just tell us some, like, what beers you used to have and renewed interest, if there's anything.
No, I mean, that's something that I think would be great. It would be actually very interesting to do if it's possible to find. I don't know if the city of New York keeps what kind of archives they have of finding a recipe from the early 1600s. Mm. So I think the very first brewery in New York City was in, like, 1613 or so, when it was still just a fort for New Amsterdam. And you know, we do have a lot of brewing history here, a lot of with the Dutch. Most people know that Stone Street was the first paved street in Manhattan, but the reason it was paved was it used to be called Brewer Street, where a lot of the Dutch breweries were. And so they said there was, because of the wagon traffic with all the heavy, the casks and the kegs, a lot of the water that was used for the brewing and just all the, you know, the mash and the grain, it was just so messy. That's why the people required or asked that the government to pave the street. So,
I didn't know that.
That's great. That's a great story. Cool. Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be great. But, yes, we do. We've worked. I mean, Yopin, like I said, we had them a while back. We've got them back again. We had Christoffel, unfortunately, no longer working with them. Brewery IJ. We hope to do something with them again. I mean, and De Molen, of course, is probably our best known Dutch brewery that we work with, brewing out of a mill.
Mike, do you have any Dutch beers on your menu?
Right now we do, yeah. We have the Yopin Quadruple, yeah.
I used to get the Christoffel for a long time, and we had a thing every year called Fancy Dutch Beer Week that we just did with BR at Jimmy's number 43, and that was always fun. But it was pretty much, it was Christoffel that I loved, and it was one Coit.
Yeah, that's the Yopin. That's their Gruet.
So that's your beer. So I had that before. I've had that. Nice. Wow, man. Cool.
Yeah, man. We have De Molen on fairly regular as well. Yeah, it's a brewery we like a lot.
Sure. Yeah, I'm waiting for that profound moment. I think you gave it to us, BR.
Yeah.
So 1613, New York City, the Dutch were here.
Dropping
I
knowledge.
I want to say around that, yeah, around that.
And so, Erwin, give us, what do you think, what beers were the Dutch making in New York in the 1600s? What do you think?
Oh, wow, that's really hard to tell, but...
Don't you have the recipes, man? Come on.
Not in my back pocket. 1609 was the first settlement of the Dutch, actually, so I'm guessing that if we're drinking a 17th century Luik's today... It's possible that it would have been something similar, but I'd need to know, and not me because there's somebody else doing this, but we'd need to know what kind of brewing grains were available, where the hops came from, et cetera, et cetera. And for sure, with the English then afterwards, it would have been English ales.
I bet you guys have a sense. What kind of beer were they making in New York in the 1600s?
Coors Light, Miller Lite. Well, no, I was actually reading. I was, you know, those little small triangle parks they have in different parts of New York City, like it's like this is Triangle Park, and then it's like just a tree in the middle of nowhere. I read in Bushwick it said, and Bushwick I think was spelled differently. It was more of like a Dutch word, like Bushwick. I don't know, like Brooklyn was. Apparently, it used to be called Bushwick Avenue. Used to be a huge brewer's road as well, and then it had the most. I think it was more German than Dutch, I believe, but there was to be the most amount of breweries in Bushwick, yeah, per capita before the Prohibition. So there's been, like, in general, like, a huge history here. And it's funny enough that we're in Bushwick now and that this used to be one of the biggest areas.
Yeah, that's true. Definitely in the 19th century it was. And Anthony, as a brewer, would you want to give a shot at what you think the 1600s early New York City brewery tastes like, whatever?
I don't know what it tastes like, but I would say it was probably a lot of hard work. We have today we have pallet jacks and forklifts to do a lot of the heavy lifting, and I can only imagine what it was like moving casks full beer around.
Well, BR, when you said that they had to pave the roads because they had like water and waste, they just probably just poured all that stuff down the street.
Well,
right?
Yeah, a lot of that. I mean, you know, Collect Pond downtown was, you know, tanneries and everything would dump all their waste. But I think it would have been initially a lot of the ingredients would have had to been imported because it was a little while before they started growing grains in New York. They found that there were wild hops growing, but I don't know if they would have used a lot of hops. I mean, that's why they were using spruce tips, even things like pumpkin as gourds, as fermentable, just to have something in the mash. And also wheat. I was just explaining to Erwin last night, I learned recently, I had to teach a class on this, which is why I sort of have the historical knowledge now, is that Tarrytown up the river is known as Tarva Town, which means wheat, because there was so much wheat being grown for both baking and brewing up the Hudson.
Great. Mike, what beer did you pour for us?
This is actually one of Anthony's beers, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
So this is a grisette of mixed fermentation that I brewed in my parents' garage back in June. So it has a simple grist. It was 70% American two-row and 30% flaked wheat. Primary fermentation with a wild strain of Saccharomyces. And then I pitched a healthy culture of Lactobacillus pediococcus and multiple strains of Brettanomyces.
Well done. This is almost like apricot. Yeah. I mean, I would guess there was some kind of, you know, tropical apricot or peach.
There's no fruit in the beer. All flavors from the fermentation.
Right on.
And then, is it Ryan?
It is Ryan.
Come on, Ryan, get in close. What do you think early 1600s New York City beer tasted like?
It was probably sour, so I'm guessing they couldn't hold fermentation temperatures. So even if they brewed something dark, they probably used part of the last batch to help ferment the new batch of beer. And because they couldn't control fermentation, you probably had all of these really strange flavors, a lot of like fruit type flavors in your darker beers, and things that just would spoil over time, for lack of a better word. And so you'd get some like sour porters that were probably pretty common, just because you couldn't maintain any sort of cleanliness standard or fermentation temp.
And what do you think, Anne? We think
that's exactly what I was thinking. I would imagine murky, kind of slightly soured, off flavor brown ales, right? A little warm, but again, they sustained and they did their job and they had their purpose. But I fully understand the German, you know, takeover of people's tastes in the 1800s.
And like Anthony was saying, it was probably hard. You know, you can't get commercial yeast strains. Like, you can't just pitch commercial yeast. So you had to reuse older batches of beer to ferment the next batch of beer. And over time, like that, those...
They just boiled sugars like gourds, and hopefully the water wasn't contaminated and they drank it as fast as they could, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's why beer was so crucial, is that the water was oftentimes contaminated, right? So we needed some way to get the sustenance, and beer did the trick.
Well, thanks for bringing us history, Mr. Yolpin.
Yeah, Anthony, this is amazing, man.
It is really good.
Yeah, I like it very much.
It's all right.
Well done. Wow.
So is this similar to anything that you make at Long Island City Beer Project?
There's similar projects in the works. We brewed a kettle sour a few weeks ago. I don't know if you guys tasted on the show, called Gal Friday. this beer that we're drinking right now is not kettle soured. It underwent about a 4-month like complex lactic fermentation. But we've been filling like crazy, a ton of wine barrels. So we ran a cool ship batch 2 weeks ago. So some promising stuff
in
the future.
Man. Let's pour another beer. Come on, let's keep this going.
Let's get it going. Do you want to do something? Let's do this. So since you've been in New York, is there anything that's really stood out to you of the local brews that you've tried? Or that are inspiring?
Well, actually, I hit JFK yesterday, so I haven't had a chance to drink that much. But I liked very much Help Me BR, the Green Point. I had the Berliner Weisse with coffee.
Green Point Beer Works.
It was outstanding.
Enduro.
That was really
Enduro.
Good.
Oh, yeah. Green Point Enduro. It's brewed at, what's the name of that restaurant?
Dirk the Norseman.
Yeah, now it's called Green Point Beer and Ales. Yeah. So did you have that at Torst?
Yes.
So that's right.
It's on Line 3, to be exact, of course. it's on the lighter side of things. It's really good.
So you know your line. So how do people order? When I go into tours, do I point? Do I say line?
Go ahead.
It's a system that is so perfect that not a lot of people realize it, because like, so many of the beers are hard to pronounce. And like, the best thing you can do is give me the number of the beer and the size pour you want. You know, because like...
Or just ask for it.
And then let Ryan's dying to say something.
No. If you come up to the bar and just go, I need a 5-ounce pours of 7, 8, 9, and 15, we will love you forever.
We will want to kiss you very hard.
Yeah, that's all we want.
You're numbers guys. That's cool. Yeah. All right, guys, we're taking a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Come on.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's heritageradionetwork.org. Check us out, be a member, and we're here for 6 years now, so we'll keep going with you guys. And there's over 30 shows. You should check them out. Cheese shows, chef shows, farm shows. And do you like being the winter co-host on Beer Sessions Radio?
Oh, come on. Look at what I'm doing right now.
You're awesome.
This is a great place.
Yeah, what's your Twitter handle?
Ann likes beer.
I love that. I always know you as
very simple,
beer.
Yeah.
And
simple
I still
and easy.
One day you'll go back on Facebook because they kick
if
you out.
If they let me, I'll go.
I hate that. So, yeah. Okay, let's get deeper now. So we asked, spring's coming up, Lent. I asked Irwin if they had Lent and any kind of Lent beers. Didn't really have a good answer.
No, because we don't. We have a Lente beer, which is translated springtime beer. We don't have a beer in particular for a certain fest. But more that we brew what we want to brew, and then we take either a season or something that we are interested in historically, like a Dutch dry stout, because all the breweries used to have a stout. It all disappeared, so we brought it back. Stuff like that.
Do any of you guys think of Lent and think of beer? And if so, do you think of a beer style? Who wants to answer that one?
Yeah, Box. Absolutely, yeah. I love Easter. I love the Box of Easter. I love the richer. De Dole has a really great... Easter beer, that's one of my favorites. I mean, what do you guys, anybody else? Because I'm drinking Box all spring. But
not everyone identifies with Lent. To me, it's liquid Lent every year. I drink like a monk. So
yeah. Oh, so, well, some of the smoky beers from Germany. Those Märzen beers are amazing.
Yeah, no, Schlenkel always has
really good. Märzen is just phenomenal.
But anything, you guys don't put up beers for Lent or for the season or anything seasonal that you guys are having on draft now?
I think we do all the seasons all the time, probably. No. Yeah. I mean, I think especially if I'm in Europe during this time, when I was in Denmark, I had some Easter beer, but it pretty much tasted like a strong Pilsner or like lager. But yeah, I mean, the classics to me are like this, the Box and like the smokier things. But I've had like these like really strong, Stark beers, I guess they call them Stark, but.
Yeah, Schlenkerle puts out a Lente beer every year. It's like incredibly rich and smoky that I always look forward to every year. It's like always pairs really well with food. It just feels like a liquid campfire in your mouth.
Mm.
Yeah. I have to confess, I have total redneck palate, and pretty much everything Schlenkerle makes, I am totally in love with. Anything super salty and super
that's
smoky.
That's redneck palate?
Bacon, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of fancy.
Smoky and bacon. Salty. Like, that, to me, like, I don't know. I love barbecue.
See, it's all about presenting it in the right way. You would assume it's fancy and that people, you know, newbies may or may not like the smoky Rausch beers, and he's thinking it's the most basic, taste we're all familiar with.
I got to relate to the people here.
Yeah, man. It's a great idea.
Is this what you guys are like every day at work? You kind of like whispering each other's ears and like high-fiving and
kiss.
Finishing each other's sentences.
We have casual Fridays at Taurus, and me and Graham always wear Hawaiian shirts.
Every Friday.
And people were like, is this Hawaiian Friday? I'm like, no, it's casual Friday. So we actually have guests coming in with Hawaiian shirts now sometimes. It's been happening little by little, which is awesome.
Come by sometime.
Yeah.
Can I ask you guys a question as a retailer as well? Like, do you get a lot of pushback? I mean, I know everyone knows Taurus and it's kind of a destination, but are you still getting that? Excuse me, can you fill this glass? You know, how do you deal with people that don't really understand fill lines and proper carbonation and proper head retention and that kind of thing? Or is that not an issue
Doesn't
for you?
Really happen.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, really?
Ryan, he wants to say, Ryan, jump in. Come on. Let this guy talk.
No, I want to say it's happening less and less. I definitely, in the beginning, like, you would see a price. They would see something like $12 for 5 ounces, and they would freak out. Or you would pour that 5 ounces, and they would see how much 5 ounces actually is in the glass, and they couldn't comprehend between like what they see and the price. And that's becoming less and less the case as the time goes on. And it allows places like the restaurant that I'm a beer director at to pour small pour sizes and get away with it because Taurus has laid that groundwork in saying that, you know, a serving doesn't necessarily need to be 12 to 16 ounces worth of beer.
So tell us about Lupulo. I know you guys have a couple cool dinners for New York City Beer Week.
Yeah. So it's Michelin star chef George Mendez, his second restaurant. His first restaurant is Aldea in Manhattan on 17th between 5th and 6th. So this is kind of his ode to Portugal.
It's Lupulo means hops in Portuguese, so it's got a craft beer focused. We have 16 lines and a relatively small bottle list. But what it allows us to do is really focus on the food. Like, we are first and foremost a restaurant, so the beer list reflects that. We there have been times on the beer list where I don't pour Imperial Stouts, just because we're seafood heavy. We do have some protein, but we are seafood heavy, and Imperial Stouts just don't fit the profile. So yeah, it's loud, it's raucous, it's a really fun time, really good place to grab a meal. And basically, I ask Mike what he's buying for the week, and then I copy it.
So what are some of the beers that you're serving there now?
So right now, let's see. I just updated it today. So we're pouring Hill Farmstead James, Double Galaxy. Got some really cool things on from Westbrook that never have left the brewery. We're pouring a barrel-aged barley wine. The barrel-aged Oud Bruin, which came into New York in bottles, but I think we got the only keg. Yeah, some really, really fun stuff. And all of it is meant to go well with the food. Like, you know, it's a place where we want to celebrate the food, and the beer list reflects that.
That's great. Let's go back to Mike. So, Mike, I know I've known you for a couple of years, but tell us your background, because you're a very interesting guy. You actually came to this business with some training and a lot of experience.
Well, yeah. I mean, I started a while back, Jimmy. my college degree is in hotel and restaurant management. So I started life in restaurants and hotels, and then got away from the business after a few years of realizing that I kind of like weekends and holidays off. got into the IT world for a decade or so, and then realized that I wanted to move back to New York at about the same time the Tourist was opening. So it was a nice a happy coincidence that that brought me to the neighborhood I was looking to move to, which is Greenpoint, and yeah, the rest is history.
And what are a couple of things that you learned in a hotel school that you still use in your as a general manager of a restaurant in New York? Or did you just forget all that and learn on the job?
Yeah, the degree part of it was some time ago. I still remember a few things, not as much as I probably like. But yeah, no, it does all boil down to service, honestly, and that's the one thing that you learn in a school that's focused for hospitality industry, is that is service rules all, yeah. And I think that's something we do really well at Tourist, yeah. Actually, yeah, and that's the one thing. I mean, Tourist can be an intimidating place, especially if you're not one of the top 1% of beer nerds on the planet. A lot of beers that people haven't heard of, from breweries that they haven't heard of, prices might be a little higher than they're used to because the beers are very expensive. So it helps that you have a crew like we have here that really really makes the unfamiliar familiar and makes people feel at home, which makes Tourist a pretty cool place.
Great. And then, again, as a manager, when you had you opened there yesterday, just tell us, like, the things you have to do to make that happen. They just show up and you pour them beers, or did you have to orchestrate?
Yeah, well, in talking to BR, we knew that Yopin was coming into the market, and it's a brand that I had known a little bit about, not too much because I haven't been exposed to it here in the market. But yeah, it's a brewery that we were excited about, and when I found out that he was coming in on Monday, yeah, we wanted to make sure to have a beer to welcome him. So that's how we brought the quad on. But yeah, it won't be the last. For sure.
And did you get invited to Tourist yesterday?
I couldn't go anywhere yesterday, so no, I did not.
Oh, man.
But if I had, it would. No, I'm just kidding. It's, yeah, Tourist is great. I mean, it's especially for the 1% of beer nerds, like he said, it's nice to have a place you know that you can ask a really geeked out question and not be the jerk at the bar. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Hey, what hops are in this? You know, a lot of bars just like, oh, shut up, just order. And this is kind of nice that you can go there and geek out together.
Erwin, we're gonna wind up soon. So tell us some of your strategies bringing your beer into the United States. Are you just going to be in New York City? Are you going to go to other cities?
No, we start here. Actually, tomorrow I'll drive to Philly and the day after to Washington, and we'll have an event at Monk's in Philadelphia and at Church Key in Washington. And actually, our owner and brewer, Michel, will also fly in. He'll be too late for the radio show, unfortunately. But nobody fits in this room anyway, so anymore. But he'll be doing a small collab with Blue Jacket in Washington. So that'll be cool. And we will be going then to the West Coast and then around the Great Lakes. And so we want to be in all of the United States. And it requires attention. And that's what I want to do, build relationships with people in bars and shops and talk to guys, great guys like this in a great bar. I love Torst, really. And what you said, you know, hospitality, I did hotel management too.
Oh, is that right?
And I fully agree. I mean, it's you have to make people happy to come to your place. And you do that right. So well done.
One last question for Erwin.
Erwin?
This guy over there, Mr. Erwin from Jopin.
Okay.
Yeah. One last question from any of you guys? You ask all the questions you want. I know you have one more question for you, Fernel. Come on.
I actually was wanting to continue on because we were touching so much on the 1% of the beer nerds. And I also have a lot of beer nerds that come with, like, people that don't drink beer. And I think the thing that we also like to expose to people is, like, even wine drinkers, cider drink, like, anything. So, I mean, for example, like, the lover beers that we tend to get through, or even any other sours that are a little bit more complex that might cost like a wine pour, I always say, well, have you ever had natural wines? Or have you ever had any of these? You know, these, try to always explain beer in a way.
If you like this style of wine, you might enjoy. I typically, like, they don't necessarily correlate, but I'm like, oh, do you enjoy Malbecs? Well, you might enjoy this Flanders or like just, it's in the way that in which you related to people.
Yeah, dissecting their palate.
Exactly. Yeah, because I think I've turned people on to beer, like, for example, one of our biggest regulars never comes in with his wife.
Brent Starks.
Yeah, Brent Starks, a shout out. I mean, he's there. We love him. And his wife came and did at Luxus. And so the first time we meet her, they brought in their own bottles of wine for, you know, whole open corkage thing. But when she came and sat down, I was like, well, look, check this out. And we opened up just different types of beers for her. And she's like, wow, what is this? I'm like, well, this is a Flanders Red, or this is a Belgium Strong, Asian wine barrels. And I think that's another concept that we hold strong, is that, you know, the delicate flavors of wine and even cocktails or anything also exist in beer. So all the rest of the people that show up at Tourist, like, you know, people say, I want a girly beer. I'm like, I don't know what that means, but what do you like to drink? You know what I mean? Like it's always about, like, making them escape their own, because, you know, we all have our own limitations. So expanding the limitations of how they describe what flavor they like as well.
That's great. Hey, you know, we're going to wrap it up. So let's go around the room. Everyone just say their name, please, like your full name and what you do, because this is a great show and there's so many people.
Anne Becerra, beer lover, nerd, all around.
Ryan Malbin, bartender at Torst, beer director at Lupolo.
Erwin Klein, I work for Jopen Brewery in Haarlem, Holland.
Jopen.
Jopen, that's right. Traveling the world.
Mike Amade, beverage director at Torst.
B.R. Rolia with Shelton Brothers.
Anthony Cerise, bartender at Terst and assistant brewer at Long Island City Beer Project.
Fernelli Cerise, bartender and morale manager at Terst.
I love that.
Graham Saylor, head beer boy at Terst.
Beer boy! Yes, we got him in there. And a couple of big shout-outs for events that are coming up, so I can say thanks to everybody. I don't have to repeat your names, but our good buddies at Bridge and Tunnel Brewery out in Queens, they're launching a Kickstarter to buy a tank. So, and you can actually go to tankfund.com. They have a party on Saturday, this coming Saturday, where you can support their Kickstarter, which is pretty cool, right? I'm sure you guys know what it's like. Imagine you need to raise money for a tank.
Brewing equipment is very, very expensive.
And I do love the small local breweries that are doing it kind of one piece of equipment at a time. And coming up on the horizon, New York City Hot Sauce Expo, something different, but it's a big part of New York City. That's April 23rd and 24th, NewYorkCityHotSauceExpo.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer, who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to everybody in the room. Thanks to our producers, Justin and Maggie, and engineer David and Jack Inslee. Thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time. All right. Woo. Bye. Later.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio.
You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.